Thank you guys so much for joining the episode here with Andrew Glaze. I just want to let you guys know up front that there are some technical difficulties here. Andrew was battling some respiratory issues, and there are some areas where it's hard to hear him. I think this message is still definitely worth hearing, so just bear with us. Thank you guys for listening again.
Who the Wild Things Are with Ryan McGuire.
You gotta listen to your body.
Oh my God, maybe, you know, I could get out there. I could do this.
Let's take a ride. Find your wild side. Real stories. See with your own eyes.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna have the best time out here.
Yeah, I was in tears. I was just like, that's the best, man.
Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. My name is Ryan McGuire, and I'm here to bring you conversations with the most wild folks on the planet. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you enjoyed the episode, share it with a friend. Appreciate you guys. Let's get it going.
How's the voice chest sickness going?
It's definitely not. I'm not 100%, but we'll see what we can do. Hopefully it'll hold up.
Yeah, no worries. If it gets to be too much, you just let me know, and I'm sure everybody will understand.
No, I mean, you know, it's just, yeah. You know what, let me grab something to drink just in case my voice starts to get a little crazy.
All right, well, super stoked that we can make this happen. I've been following along for a long time, and I just, you know, I've been wanting to get the chance to sit down and talk with you, so I'm glad we can make it happen.
Yeah.
So, I guess the first question I have for you, before we really dive into all the cool stuff you have going on right now, is did you think of yourself when you were young as somebody that wanted to be an athlete? Were you always like, I'm going to be an athlete when I grow up?
No. I mean, I played sports a little bit. Like, I played football when I was like really young. Mostly because my dad forced me to do it. It wasn't like I actively like wanted to play sports. You know, like my parents put me in soccer in kindergarten. They put me in t-ball. My dad played football. You know, he was like the high school football star. So It was like real important for him, for his son to play football. So I think in like third grade, he told me I was going to play football, which of course I didn't want to. And then he, you know, forced me to. It ended up being, you know, an awesome experience. I made great friends and, you know, all those things that you learn in like team sports. But, you know, it's a significant amount of time commitment and everything. And then I had like a, somehow, you know, like you start, you do a position, and then like you're kind of stuck with that position like your whole career. And I was an offensive lineman, which is like, you know, probably one of the most unglorious, uncelebrated positions out there. You know, you basically protect the quarterback. And so, you know, I got really good at doing things and not having anybody pat me on the back. Oh, good job, you know, like, because it was my job to protect the quarterback. So if we scored, yeah, the quarterback got credit. Yeah, the wide receiver got credit. The running back got credit. But, like, nobody ever goes, hey, great job, offensive line, even though, like, you know, we're the reason that there was a hole or quarterback had that extra 3 seconds to throw the ball. And so I just got really good at, you know, kind of doing work where it's celebrated. And then I eventually got to the point where I'm not big enough to be an offensive lineman. So when I got to like varsity, it was like, I remember the coach was like, well, you can either start taking steroids or you can, you know, be on the B squad. And, you know, I saw the guys on steroids and they had zits all over them. And I wasn't interested in that lifestyle. So plus I started kind of going down the bad kid path towards varsity, and so it wasn't really, football wasn't my thing anymore. And I mean, that was a long answer to I never really saw myself as an athlete. I played a sport, but yeah, and you know, you get a Letterman jacket, a cheerleader, and that sort of stuff. But it wasn't like I was like thinking in the future like this was going to be anything more than just high school and, you know, junior high and all that sort of stuff. So
the reason I ask is because I've been talking to different folks, you know, and survival and adventure and ultra running and all these people who are doing like really hard things for reasons that maybe somebody more quote unquote normal couldn't understand. And I'm trying to draw conclusions or see if there's similarities like between the way people grow up and sort of their mentality as a kid and see if that kind of translates into becoming an ultra runner, becoming an adventurer. Are there any things from your childhood that like stick out as definitive moments that led you to this point now? Is it part of being a bad, like kind of like that bad rebellious kid, like that bad boy?
No, I think it just more, my father was a really, really hard worker and really instilled in me the value of like hard work and the value of it. And if you know, do hard work, you're normally rewarded. And it was, you know, a financial reward, and, you know, he instilled in me the value of money. And, you know, that, you know, he was somebody that worked 100 to 120 hours a week. He owned his own business, you know, and he was able to provide for the family and everything really, really well because, you know, he worked really, really hard. Now, he was never home, you know, he had, you know, which was a whole other issue, but like, you know, it was just like the way I was raised was just like doing, you know, hard things. When I was 10 years old, I got my first job working for him, you know, worked every summer, worked after school, like all growing up. And when I went to college, I'd come home and I'd work all summer. Like I worked at college, I had a job at college, and just was always putting in that hard work. Like, and I think that work ethic is sort of where I'm at now. I mean, obviously to like a slight extreme, but like, you know, I'm not afraid of hard work. I'm not afraid of putting in the time. I don't think I'm like inherently all that talented. I don't think that, you know, you look at like the guys that win ultras now and they're like, you know, 1 hour half marathoners and like, you know, 2:30 marathoners and they're like super fast and like, incredible. I was never that. I mean, there was times when I ran slightly fast, but like maybe slightly fast on a local level, not like, you know, like, you know, I just, I don't know. I think for me, it's like, I found that if I just put in the work, if I put in the time, that I can be rewarded, but maybe it's not like I'm winning. It's like an internal reward, kind of like on the football field where it was like, you win the game. Like, it was like an internal reward for me because I knew that if I did a good job that we would win when I was part of the team. I know now, like if I put in the hard work and I put in the time and effort, that I can be successful in what I want to do, not just in ultra running, but like in life, like, in my career, in my family, like whatever, like I don't look for shortcuts. I don't look for the easy route. I just know that if it's worthwhile, a lot of times it just takes time. You just got to put in the time. So,
was exercising always a piece of that you enjoyed, or did that come later?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say that when I was young, I super much enjoyed it. It was, you know, I liked playing the game, but I hated all the practice. I didn't really understand why we needed to practice 2 hours every day for 7 days so that I could play a 2 hour game when I was only having fun for those 2 hours. I wasn't like smart enough to understand that like all the practice was why the game was fun. Looking back now in hindsight, I can see, you know, why we did it and why we were then successful in the game. But as a child, I didn't think about it. And then after, you know, from 16 to 24, I did very, very little exercise in my life. So I mean, for the last 21 years, I've been a runner, I've done a lot of things, but there's, you know, 8 years where I did very little. And then, you know, before then it was mostly just team sports and stuff like that. So, although I, you know, as a child, I was born in the 70s. So it's like, I grew up in that time when you know, we all didn't come home till it was dark, and we were all running around. We had cell phones or anything, so, you know, you had to walk or run or ride your bike or, you know, do all that sort of stuff. I was an active kid. I mean, it wasn't like I was sitting home watching TV. I was roaming the neighborhood all day and all night till the streetlights came on. It wasn't like a focus. It wasn't like I was like, oh, I like exercise. Like, if someone had said, hey, here's a cell phone, and, you know, fast forward 10 years in the future, I'm sure my childhood self would have been super happy to just call somebody and not have to ride 3 miles over to the house to find out they were home.
Yeah, but that was when we had all the adventure, you know. Kids, yeah, these days, they'll never know.
No. And, you know, we'd meet up in the park, or we'd meet up at the school, and we'd, you know, play tag football, you know, whatever. We had fun back then, but I wasn't focused on, oh, I'm athletic, or, oh, this is exercise, or anything like that. When I was in my 20s, I started having, like, pretty significant anxiety issues, problems like that, because I wasn't active, that I start making the correlation between exercise being a good thing and exercise being something that could, like, help me. Previous to that, I never really thought about it. I didn't exercise at all, like, all through college, everything, like, you know, I didn't do any of that. And so, but now, obviously, it's a huge part of my life, and, you know, I understand the importance.
So that's interesting. You kind of, rather than exercising to get in shape or to have a six-pack, you were like, I kind of feel like shit, and I'm kind of anxious all the time. I need to exercise?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the origin story of my exercise, is I was having horrible anxiety. I didn't know what it was. You know, this is got to be in like 90, let's see, no, maybe it was 2000, like early 2000s, maybe 2002 or something like that. And I was having anxiety. I had no idea what it was. You know, the internet wasn't big back then. It wasn't like I could go on and, you know, if I went on WebMD, they probably would have said like, oh, you're going to die. You know, but like, there wasn't like any good resources. There was no podcasts. There was nothing, nobody talking about anything. And so, you know, somebody, and I don't even know who the person was, like, told me, like, hey, it sounds like, you know, you're having some anxiety, like, maybe you should start working out. And I got a personal trainer and started working out. And I wasn't running. I was doing, like, the elliptical trainer. I was lifting weights. I was, you know, doing all that stuff that you would do at, like, an LA Fitness or, you know, 24 Hour Fitness or something like that. It worked. So, you know, that was how it all kind of like started off, was me just not wanting to feel anxious, and I was having like, you know, panic attacks, and like felt I couldn't breathe, and I thought I was dying and all this stuff. And it was because I was super inactive. I'd been super inactive, you know, for, I guess, 8 years at that point, you know, smoked cigarettes, drank, smoked weed, you know, like nothing positive with my life. Worked weird hours, like, you know, just nothing good. So, and then I discovered exercise as an adult, and like never looked back.
When you say you worked weird hours, was this part of your, 'cause I know you're a firefighter now. Was that part of the picture at that point?
No, I didn't become a firefighter until I was in my 30s. I did like, worked on computers, and I did like network security, on computers, or like web, I mean, anything that was like, 'cause this was like right around the 2000s when like the crash happened and everything, but like build websites, e-commerce, you know, whatever people needed back then, like I was able to provide, and I just sort of worked for myself, like, you know, doing all that stuff, 'cause there was still a market for it. It was before like everything was automated, and like, you could just like, oh, I want to build a web page. Like, I'll just open up this program that will build it for me. It was, you know, before all that. So, and e-commerce was still, even though we had just had the crash in 2000, you know, people still wanted to sell stuff online, and they're still trying to figure out that whole stuff. So securing servers and all that boring stuff. But yeah, I worked weird hours. I work at night a lot. And, Yeah, just I wasn't on a normal schedule because I didn't have to be. I wasn't on like a 9-to-5. It was like more of like a deadline type job. So
how did that transition into being a firefighter?
Well, I mean, it was a lot of life changes all at once. Like I went through a divorce, and after the divorce, I was kind of like, I wanted to change a lot of things about myself because, you know, this is a good opportunity, good fresh start. Right around that same time, my grandfather died, who was like a big influence in my life, and he was a pediatrician. And so when I was at his funeral, he was a pediatrician back in the day when you would like actually do house calls and like go to people's homes and like, so he made like a huge impact. And so at his funeral, like 500 people showed up from the community and they were all like, you know, adults, 50s, 60s, or, you know, and they were, you know, they all would come up to tell me like, your grandpa, when I was a little baby, like, help me and like, blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself like, wow, like, my grandpa really made an impact to the point where all these people came to his funeral because at some point in these people's lives, my grandpa was able to touch them, help them, and, you know, whether it was keep them alive or do something that made their life better. And it just started making me like, okay, well, obviously computers, nobody's coming to my, you know, funeral being like, well, this guy built me a website or he fixed my printer or whatever the hell I, you know, could do. So I started looking for jobs that were like a little bit more like fulfilling that would like help people, but also like, you know, make me feel like I was doing something positive. And, you know, through a series of, you know, lots of research, I looked at, you know, being a PA, being a physical therapist, you know, lots of different things, just kind of like testing the waters. I came up, you know, a lot of my friends were firefighter paramedics at the time. And, you know, they kind of like, hey, try this. And so I went down that path and didn't officially get hired with our department until I was like, I think 31 or something like that. So I was pretty, it was pretty late, big switch. You know, I was going to community college to get my EMT and, you know, I'm 30 and everyone's 18 and just out of high school, I was the oldest guy in the class. Went to the fire academy, I was the oldest guy in the class. And, you know, just completely switched careers. And, you know, now I'm doing something that I feel like is providing a better service for like the world, I guess, or society in general. And it keeps my cup full. Like I feel like better about what's going on with me because of what I'm able to do at work. And a lot of times it's like kind of like the football thing. Like a lot of times, you know, you'll save a life or you do something and you'll never hear from that person again. You'll know you saved them and like, you know, maybe they went on and did big things. Maybe they went on and didn't, but you know, you saved them. And then other times, like you save people and you become like good friends with them and good friends with their families. And like one of my best friends is a guy that he had a heart attack and I saved him on with a team, you know, like we're a team. And he came to my wedding and like, you know, we talk every week and like we're like really good friends. I mean, he's like 60 something, but like yeah, I mean, that's really, really rewarding too, to know that this guy was like dead and like we were able to like work as a team and bring him back. And then all the things he's accomplished since he's been alive, because he calls himself Freddy 2.0 because he's, you know, it's his second life. And he's done all these amazing things since he's been, you know, since he came back. And that's really, really cool too. So definitely yeah. Wasn't getting that when I was working on computers. So.
Wow. That's special, man. To have, you know, you think about firefighters, like getting like the cat out of the tree, you know, like in the cartoons, right? Or, you know, saving or, you know, putting out a house fire. But I guess you don't, from an outside perspective, think about how closely and intertwined you are with your community as a firefighter and EMT. That's really cool that you can not only save the life, but also turn that into a lifelong relationship.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, you know, kids that have drowned that we've saved, and like the family sends us cards every year on the kid's birthday, or like, I get emotional thinking about it, but like, yeah, a lot of really touching stuff that we see people on their worst day, but hopefully we turn it into like a better situation. So, that's the whole paramedic side of it. You know, the firefighting side's like, you know, it's fun, you know, the whole idea of, you know, working as a team dynamically to like put out a complex situation, but you know, we do medical, but like, you know, there's lots of, and when we do hazmat, we do, you know, if there's a like huge car accident or something like that, and you got to like cut them out with the jaws of life. Like there's a lot of different aspects to firefighting. That's not just, you know, putting out a house fire, a building fire or something like that. So.
Sure. And I think something that's interesting from the people I know that are firefighters, actually a lot of them are like endurance athletes, and I'm wondering, is part of that because the schedule is so much different than a normal schedule that it kind of allows you to maybe get in these miles midday or stay on your feet and stay active while other folks with a more prototypical job would be kind of just sitting behind a desk?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, like, it's I get paid for like the full 24 hours, but like, you know, people can call 911 at any time. So it's, you got to fit it in where you can fit it in, but there are like more opportunities, I think, for me to like work out like throughout. I'm not like allowed to work out from like in the working hours, like 10 to 5, but like in the morning I'm allowed to work out, and then I can work out in the evening. So, you know, like anything, a lot of times, you know, people call 911 all the time, so you don't get what you'd like to get, obviously, but it gives you the opportunity, if you want to work out, to work out. A lot of times we do have time to do it, which is nice. It also deals with the stress of the job. Like it's very stressful to deal with people on their worst day and see like a lot of horrible stuff, you know, because you get the saves, but I would say the saves are, you know, 5% of the calls. A lot of the calls are not saves, and a lot of calls are, you know, just mundane stuff that you like, stuff you don't want to see, like people that just don't take care of themselves and don't want to be taken care of, and like, you know, are angry at you or like, you know, whatever. Just people taking advantage of the system and things like that. So it is nice to have an outlet again at work to be able to like work out and like deal with that stress. PTSD is like a pretty serious like issue going on in the fire service right now, and like a lot of the big unions are like trying to figure out ways to like tackle it, because you know, there's a high amount of firefighters that are now like committing suicide. It's one of the number one killers of firefighters nowadays, overtaking like cardiac issues or cancers and stuff like that. So, I think when it comes to PTSD and the stress of our job, like obviously there's a lot of different avenues to take, but I think one of the easiest ones we can take is exercise. It doesn't always work. You know, we have opportunities to speak to therapists after really stressful calls, and just, I mean, I can talk to a therapist through my employer's assistance program, like anytime I want, but, for just that like immediate, like stress debrief, I find for me, exercise works really well. So, yeah, it's one of those things that's sort of built into the job, and yeah, if you make the time, it's hard for me to say, cause there's a lot of like, yes, there's a lot of firefighters that are endurance athletes, but I would say there's a lot more firefighters that are not endurance athletes. There's a lot of firefighters that are, you know, that don't treat their body like a temple. So, you definitely have, I mean, like anything, if you make time for things, then you can make it work. But I wouldn't say that it's like easier to do it when you're a firefighter. It's just the opportunity is there. but it's still very challenging to juggle it all.
I hadn't even thought about the mental, well, it could be fuel or it could be debilitating depending on how that day or that situation goes. But I hadn't even thought about like the mental state of a firefighter and how that builds into, you know, a workout or a run. Because, I mean, anybody who's an athlete knows that your mindset coming into a workout or coming into a race is just as important as the shape of your body, right? Wherever your mind is. Now, I'm curious, like, do you see your work and the things that happen on a day-to-day call affect the way that you're able to train?
I don't know if it like affects the way I train. Like, I think the hardest thing that affects the way I train is like the irregular sleep pattern, because you know, we'll go long periods of time sometimes without real sleep, or maybe you'll just sleep like an hour or two at night, and then you try to catch like a quick nap. Sometimes you can get like 45 minutes or an hour, but sometimes you can't. And so like my normal schedule is working 48 hours straight. So if I go 2 days with very little sleep and then get sent home, you know, I'm wrecked. If you read all the books on sleep and listen to the podcast and do all that stuff, there's no, according to the experts, there's no like making up for like lost sleep. Yeah, you try to take a nap when you come home, or you try to do things, but I think the lack of sleep is probably the thing that affects training and everything the most. You know, for me, they say the way like PTSD and all that works is it's kind of like a pile that you're just stacking on top of, and you don't really think about how big the pile is getting until it's like too big and then overwhelming. And so I guess when I do these endurance events, or I, you know, train hard, you know, because I run like, you know, a lot of miles every day, I feel like it keeps the pile smaller. Like I'm able to sort of like decompress some of the bigger calls and not let them get so overwhelming. And then it's like they're still there, but like I don't like think about them as much. Like they're just like not a part of it. And like when I do like the real, like if I do like a 100 miler, there's like moments in the 100 miler where my brain just like ceases to like really think about anything other than just sort of staying alive. You know, what do I need to eat? You know, what's going on with my body? What's the terrain ahead? How many miles to the next aid station? Like I'm like laser focused on just staying alive and like finishing the race. And so that's to me very soothing, because like I don't think about anything other than that. And I don't get like the busy brain where I like think about bad calls or think about the stresses of like real life. I'm just like, I'm living in the moment of this like crazy race that I'm doing. And that's what I really like crave. Like I love to like sort of shut the brain off and get it into that crazy like survival instinct mode. And I find that super, super therapeutic.
For somebody that's listening to that piece right there, you kind of glanced over it a little bit casually because you're a humble guy. You said you run a lot of miles every day. Give people a little bit of insight into how much you have been running over the last couple of years.
Over the last like 3 or so years, I've run, I think, between 23 and 24,000 miles. I'm doing like this like streak thing where I run over 100 miles a week, and I just finished week 172. So about 3 years plus of running over 100 miles every week.
And that's in a row.
In a row, yeah. Like, no, it was a streak.
Like, yeah, every week. Never missed. Breaking.
Yeah. And then, you know, mixed into these, like, high volume weeks is I've been doing, like, a lot of ultra marathons, which, like, so this year I've done 11. I've done 800 milers, one 250 miler, and then 65 miler and a 33 miler. Yeah. So, like, just, you know, that's hard because in the next week I still have to run 100 miles.
Right. And
distance, and you know, I'd just done this like crazy race. So yeah, some pretty significant endurance style, you know, events and just high volume running. I think I averaged like about 22 miles a day. Although not that much this year, just because I've been racing so much, it's hard to like balance that many miles when you have like, you know, like big races. But yeah, significant amount. 7,000 to 8,000 miles a year or something like that.
I mean, you're running more than most people drive, I feel like, at this point. You're like a machine.
Yeah, so I think I'm getting close to 50,000 miles on Strava, which is like an app. I keep track of my miles, and yeah, I'm getting close to 50,000 just on that app alone.
Have you been getting regular oil changes? Like, have you?
I mean, you know, when you run that much, your whole focus in life is staying healthy. That's why it's like I'm getting over this illness, and it's like I do not get sick very often. Like, it is very, very infrequent. But it's been at least a year, maybe longer, since I've gotten sick. And before that, it had been several years. So, I try to take really good care of myself. You know, I mean, I'm getting older, I'm 45, and it's definitely, it's challenging at times. But it, you know, I'm still moving forward. So we'll see what happens.
What's the story behind deciding to do 100 miles every week? And what did you have in mind, and as far as like time horizon, when you decide, okay, I'm gonna try and do, because you hear people do run streaks, right? Run a mile every day for a year. What was your time horizon when you're like, I'm gonna do 100 miles a week?
Well, I mean, so I did, I think in 2018, I did 2,800 mile weeks in a row.
And okay.
I ended up like running Badwater, which is this crazy ultra marathon where you run from the hottest place in the world, which is Badwater Basin. And it was like 128 degrees, and you run to like Mount Whitney, which is like this big mountain in California. And I got super sick. I had like an electrolyte imbalance, like didn't pee for 18 hours. My whole body cramped up. I ended up not finishing the race, and it killed my streak. And then, you know, I mean, I'm still a high volume runner, so even after that, like, I still threw in some 100-mile weeks and did what I need to do, but I didn't do them, like, consecutively. And then I think, like, you know, the origin is basically COVID, where all the races got canceled, and, you know, all of a sudden it was like, well, got to do something hard to, like, you know, keep myself busy, because I can't – if there's no races out there to, like, strive for. I was doing, like, virtual races and, you know, all the dumb stuff that they came up with during COVID to, like – you know, keep a bunch of endurance athletes like active. But yeah, I just sort of like started up the streak again, which gave me just something to focus on. Cause if you can imagine the stress of being a firefighter paramedic, try thinking about being a firefighter paramedic on the front lines of COVID when nobody knew what was going on. And, you know, everyone's calling 911, and, you know, we had to gown up in these hazmat suits and like with these crazy masks and do all this stuff. And like, so I needed an outlet to deal with the stress of, you know, all that. And I wasn't going to be racing, and, you know, they were trying to close down even outside. And so I was sort of like the origin. And then, you know, like anything, when you're an endurance athlete and you get crazy about something, like, well, here I am. But like, I assumed that like I would be injured or get sick or something would happen in life where like this streak wouldn't continue quite this long. You know, there's been a couple low points where I didn't know if it was going to continue, but somehow managed to like eke it out. But when I started it, there was no way. I was like, oh yeah, I'm sure I'll be doing this in 3 years, because I had already done it for 28 weeks and, you know, something came up and I failed. And you know, I was like, oh, okay, you know, 28 weeks is pretty good. You know, at the time, 28 weeks of running 100 miles in a ring, like, people were like so blown away. Like, not normal people, but like the, like, my little ultra community. Like, I, you know, because haven't always been as big on social media as I am now. And so, like, it used to be before, like, TikTok and Reels and stuff where, like, the algorithm started pushing you out to, like, everybody. Used to be just be, like, you know, the people that followed me were mostly just, like, ultra runners. And I followed ultra runners. Or, like, you know what I mean? So in my little community, people knew that I was doing it. But outside of that, you know, there wasn't much interest or anything like that. And there's no way to push that message out because the algorithm, the way that worked, just, you know, that's not how Instagram worked back then. It was like you posted a picture or whatever, you know, there's no real video or anything like that. So, but yeah, I mean, here I am like over 3 years later and it's still going on. And I'll tell you, this last week was probably my closest near miss that I've ever had. I was so sick and I was just lying in bed like for an entire day. Tried to run in the morning. I got 2 miles and just about died. Went home, just immediately slept until 5 p.m. And it was like Saturday and I needed like 25 miles. And I told my wife, I go, I think this is the end. And she was like, this isn't the end. You're gonna figure this out. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like in bad shape. I like could not fathom running like 25 miles. I mean, that was like, and I had a day and a half to do it. And I was like, I don't think it's going to happen. But long story short, I made it happen. So,
tell me, how did you break up those last 25 in the day and a half?
So I ended up running like 6 miles, that night, though they were quite slow and painful. The issue was like, it got into my lungs. And so like, I like taking a deep breath was like super hard. And so luckily I was at the beach, which is like, you know, I'm at sea level, which is probably like the best spot to be if you have like some sort of respiratory thing. And I could just like, there's a path that just goes forever on the beach. So I'm like at sea level and it's flat. So I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And so I got like 6 done. So I'm like, all right, I got like 19 to go. And I got a good night's sleep. I woke up. I was still super sick. But Sunday morning, I just like went out and I just knocked out 15 miles. And like I got into like some podcast and was like, you know, just got really into it and just like got in my zone. And then I slept like the whole rest of the day. And then I think I got 5 miles in the evening that night, but like, you know, got it done. And then Monday I was like, oh, I was like so broken off because I had done like 20 miles on Sunday. I was like, oh man. But then, you know, I was able to still get like 17 miles on Monday. So it's still like hit or miss. I'm feeling better, but like, it's still taking a really deep breath is hard. So I got to just keep the heart rate super low and just, you know, not push myself super hard. And let me just preface, I don't recommend anybody do that. This is like really stupid shit. And like, I know that it's stupid shit. I know what doctors say and, you know, but if you want to have a run streak, sometimes you got to make some bad decisions. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's like people can say and have all their opinions about you that they'd like, but in my opinion, as far as I know, you're in uncharted territory. So who is anyone to tell you what to do at this point?
Right. I mean, I am in a little bit of uncharted territory for sure. I mean, I don't know if you follow like Candace, who she, you know, runs the 200 mile races, and she did like, what is it, like 200 days of running 33 miles or something like that.
Yeah, she's a Colorado girl, I think. I think she lives in Colorado.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, again, she was doing pretty amazing stuff too, and everybody told her that she was gonna fail and she was gonna do all these horrible things to her body, and she just kept getting stronger, and you know, she threw in some ultras in there too, and like, you know, she made it work. So
yeah, she ripped the Hurt 100 like square in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And which is one of the, you know, it's a very, very hard 100 miler. That's one that I'm terrified. I will do it someday, but it's like a terrifying race for me. So I know I'll have to do it. but mostly because I'm just a horrible mud runner. It's like, God, it's like my weakness. But everybody's going to tell you that these things are, you know, I shouldn't be doing it. And that's why I always just tell people, I agree. Like, you should not do what I'm doing. Like, I'm not. And if you follow me, you say you follow me, like, I never tell people, like, hey, do what I'm doing. Like, you know, you can use me for inspiration, but, like, don't try to do it. If you try to do what I'm doing, you're going to end up with an overuse injury. You're going to end up with all sorts of problems. And, you know, I don't encourage that. I mean, you know, do hard things, you know, push yourself and, like, you know, do ultras and do all that stuff. Yeah, but don't try to do this crazy run streak for, you know, I mean, it's not encouraged by me.
So do you think you are built different, like, in terms of durability? Do you think that there's something different about the way that your body works, or is it mostly between the ears?
I think that I've gotten really, really good at running efficiently, and I really, really understand how my body works. And then I've learned the time that speed causes injuries.
Yeah.
And maybe not across the board. Like, you know, I'm not a coach. I always say, like, but from my experience in running for 20 something years, anytime I've ever run fast or done fast workouts or speed workouts, those are the times when I always end up injured. And so now I focus on zone two running. You know, people say the 80-20 rule. I do the 100-0 rule, which is 100% zone two, 0% speed. And find that in moments where I need speed, I can find it through, like, my brain. It's like when you're running 100-mile races, unless you're, like, trying to win them, a lot of it's zone two work. Like, you're not out there. If you're in zone three or zone four, you're probably doing it wrong.
You're toast.
Unless you're in, like, the last 5 miles or something like that, and you're really feeling like you can charge. You should be zone two the whole time. And, you know, a lot of people are, you know, hiking them and, like, doing them in probably zone one. So, you know, you should probably train how you race, you know, and it's great if you can run 8 minute, 7 minute miles and you can do, like, these fast runs, but you're not going to be doing that during a 100-miler, probably not going to even be doing it during, like, a 50-miler. So,
yeah,
you know, I try to do that through, like, really good body mechanics, through, you know, making sure I always have a good pair of shoes and I don't put too many miles on them, and staying in zone two. I think all those play, you know, a factor in, you know, super injured. Although, you know, I get, like, I'm a human being. Like, I pull muscles and do things all the time, and I just have to work through them. I get massages. I do ice baths. I do sauna. You know, I drink a ton of water. Take a variety of supplements that may or may not help. You know. So I try to stay healthy. So
what's your diet like? Are you eating a lot more calories than the average individual based on just the incredible amount of exertion and just overall time on feet?
Yeah, so I don't count anything, but I had a PhD student do, like, I think it was like a 1 month study on me where they gave me this app and I put in everything I ate for, like, a month. And then they gave me this report. And so I can only really speak based on that report. My diet's pretty much the same as when I did it. It was probably like a year or two ago. And the report basically told me, like, that I eat and burn very similar to the same amount of, like, calories. So it's like my calories in and my calories out are very, very similar, because also part of the study was I would put in how much exercise I had done a day. And that was, like, I eat about 5,000 calories a day.
Okay.
And out of those calories, 50% are carbs. Like, 30 to 35% is fat, and then, like, 15 to 10% is protein.
Gotcha.
100% vegan diet, and Jesus. Yeah, I mean, that's so, yeah, I eat about 5,000 calories a day. I like to eat. I'm not one of those people that has a hard time eating. So, you know, it's easy for me. People are like, oh, I could never eat that much. And it's like, yeah, I understand that there's people out there that have a really hard time eating. That is not me. If I stopped running, I'd probably be like 200 pounds. You know, right. It would be hard for me not to eat. I love food. I love eating. I look forward to eating like every day. So, yeah, food makes me super happy.
For folks that are trying to imagine this amount of work, can you put it in a time scale? Like, think about these miles or your weekly run streak. What does the mileage and time look like?
It normally is like, I would say like on average, probably 30 hours a week.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, on like smaller, like, you know, like, so this last week I only ran 105 miles. And I think.
Dang, dude, like, that's nothing.
Yeah, it was low. It was, you know, 20 something hours, but normally, cause I'm running like 140 to 180 miles a week. I think if you look back through my Strava, it's normally about 30 hours a week.
It's just funny, like that soundbite right there. Be like, yeah, I had an off week. It was 105 miles. Like, that's more than some people run in their life.
Well, again, you know, I always tell people, comparison is the death of joy. Don't compare yourself to me, because you know it's gonna kill your joy. You should be really happy even if you run 1 mile a day. That's more than most people.
Yeah, and that's a big part of your message, which I've always appreciated, is just kind of this smile or you're doing it wrong attitude, where it's just like, if you're not having fun while doing this sort of thing, then it's not worth doing at all.
Well, you know, and I think when you look at sports in general, like when we're growing up, running is like punishment, you know,
right.
and then you get into like, when you become a runner as an adult, it's like all about like, how fast can you do your 5K? How fast can you do your 10K? How fast can you going to pass and qualify? You got to do all this. It's like faster, faster, faster. And there's a lot of joy lost in trying to push yourself to go harder and harder and harder every time. There's a lot of fun in just running, like not necessarily doing a race or just the art of running, like running in the hills, running on the street, whatever. I try to push that, like, you know, hey, like, it doesn't always have to be this like crazy competition. It can just be fun. Like, you can just go out there and have a good time, you know, try to like flip the switch, especially for like adults. Like, you know, we don't always have to be so competitive with everything we do. Like, you can just do something because it's fun. And then, you know, there's like that mental shift in running too, where it's like, it is a lot mental. So, you know, if you can stay positive and you can stay smiling and you can stay in that zone in your brain, your run or your race or whatever is going to, it's going to be better. Especially during the low points, if you can somehow force out a smile, there's like a mental shift, like smile at somebody during a race, they will instinctively smile back at you. And you'll have a like reaction in your brain. It's like the weirdest thing. Like, you can't stop that reaction from happening. If someone smiles at you, you will like smile back. Even if you were like, you know, in the hurt box and you're hating your life, like there's something that happens in your brain. And so, you know, it just really helps push through like a lot of that, like those hard points in a race or in a long run or in a short run or whatever. You can just keep that mental positivity.
So you did a recent race called the Cocodona 250. My friend Don, who was also on the podcast, did it. And I know you even did like the section beforehand, so it ended up being even longer. Walk me through just a little bit about that race series and what it was like leading up to what I assume to be your longest ultra of the year.
Yeah, so there wasn't, I made up this thing where I found a race that was like a day before and I ran it and then like had a day off and then ran Cocodona. So it wasn't like a race series. It was just like, it was something I just made up. And then I called it the Coco Canyons because one was called Canyons 100 Miler and one was called Cocodona. So that was just like, that was just me being extreme. But Cocodona is, so I've done it all 3 years. The race has been around for 3 years. I've done it all 3 years. I've done it all 3 years solo, which means I go out there with no crew, no pacer, nobody to help me. And it's a beast, man. It's a very, very challenging race through some very, very tough conditions. It's almost like more of like a through hike than it is like an ultra marathon, because there's so many sections that are like really unrunnable because they're so rocky and technical. Sections just like really, really beat you up because that rocky technical stuff is like really hard on all your stability muscles and all that sort of stuff that you need. And then you're dealing with like lack of sleep, multiple day events, you know, hot days, cold nights, dry weather to the point where your nose bleeds and your lips crack, and you know, all the, you're having to manage, you know, going to the bathroom and eating and, you know, all the craziness over multiple days. The race starts like just north of Phoenix and it ends in Flagstaff. And for people that don't know a lot about Arizona, they think, oh, it's like a desert. It is a desert, but the northern part of Arizona is like Grand Canyon. So it's very, very high. It's like Flagstaff is like above 7,000 feet. So like, you know, people think of like, you know, Denver, Colorado is so high. And I think Denver's like 5,000 feet. So it's like 2,000 feet higher than Denver. It's very mountainous and stuff. And so you're basically climbing out of the desert into these, you know, mountains, which is also very, very challenging. Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really brutally beautiful, but like very, very hard race. I hope it becomes like a really big thing. What's that?
How does that change it being alone? What's the like the shift in mindset versus having a crewed ultra versus doing it kind of unsupported?
I mean, so I have had a few races where people have crewed me. It was mostly like when I had first started doing ultras. And then I started racing internationally, and most international races like don't allow you to have any help. And so I started doing like a hard shift back in America to like get away from that like crew life and that pace life. And I just found that it was like, it's a lot harder because in ultra marathoning, like a lot of times you get a little loopy. Like your brain gets like fatigued and like you'll hallucinate and you'll think weird things and you'll want to quit, or like your brain plays like a lot of very intense tricks on you. Especially if you get dehydrated or if you get, you know, low on calories or you've just been up for like a day and a half or something like that. So not having a crew or not having like a pacer, which a pacer is somebody that runs alongside you and like, you know, can talk to you and help you and push you. Not having all that makes you super reliant on just you, which is very, very difficult. This is what I like, you know, I mean, it makes the race a lot harder. It makes, I just watched this documentary on Cocodona, which was really amazing. And the person in the documentary had like 20 people following them around, doing all this stuff for them. Like they get to the aid station, they'd have a van with a bed in there and they fall in and, you know, they'd sleep on this bed and do all this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I was literally just falling on the dirt and just sleeping in like, you know, deer shit. And like, just, that was like my reality for like 4 days. It's a very different experience. You know, it's like, the difference between staying at like the Ritz-Carlton and then like, you know, going and staying at like a Holiday Inn Express or something like that, or like a Motel 6, you know, it's
Motel shit.
Yeah. I mean, you're just like just out there roughing it, which I like, you know. I'd have to come and do an aid station and like, you have to have everything in your brain. Like, okay, I have to do this, 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 and this. And like, what's the consequences if you forget? Like one time, I did everything I needed to do. I put sunscreen on, I ate, I did all this stuff, and I took off. And 10 miles into the next aid station, I realized, shit, I didn't put any calories in my backpack. So I had like no food. So now I got to go 20 miles with no food. What are the consequences of that? Well, there's real consequences, real severe consequences. And there's no one to blame but yourself. And like, you know, you try not to make those mistakes, but, you know, inevitably you make all sorts of crazy mistakes when it's just you and your brain's like fried. But I love that. Like, I'm all about that life. I look around and I see everybody getting pampered and like, oh, what do you need? What do you, and I just think to myself, like, yeah, that'd be nice, but it's so much like nicer just to be out here by myself. Like just Andy. Andy's, you know, I think I got to do it all myself. And I really like that. So, but you know, it's just me. And then when people are like, oh, what place did you get? I'm like, what place did I get, like, against all the other people that were out there doing it by themselves, or against all the people with 20 people following them around? Like, you know, I mean, how do you even categorize, you know, competition when it comes to something like that? You know, yeah, like I could have a whole crew and they could help me, and I could have a pacer and I could do all that stuff, but I don't. So am I competing against the people that, you know, having all that other stuff? Like, in my mind, I'm not. And in my mind, I'm not competing against those people, because they're on they're doing a different type of race. So, yeah.
Have you ever thought about doing like unsupported FKTs?
I did one last year. I would probably love it. It's just I've never really dipped my toe too much into that world, so I don't know a whole lot about it. But I did race a little bit with Jeff Garmeyer, who's like the king of FKTs at Cocodona this year, and we talked a little bit about it. I think that it would be fun, like on some things. I did a double Joshua Tree Traverse, which is like it ends up being like 74 miles, and I did it like self-supported, so I had to carry all my own food and water for 74 miles, and I got the FKT I think last December. So that was my first attempt. It wasn't anything special. I think I got the FKT by like 45 minutes or an hour or something like that, but you know, it was still hard carrying food and water for 75 miles. That was like, I was like, wow, this is a lot of weight to start off the adventure with. So
I was actually talking to Jeff a little bit, because he has a lot of FKTs, but he has the one, the Colorado Trail, and I'm going for that in August, different variation. So the Colorado Trail, you know, you can do it in different ways, but yeah, Garmeyer's like the king of just powering through on no sleep, limited calories. Just he's able to really go to some dark places and keep putting down mileage.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing, man. We I think we ran the first, I don't know, we were somewhere on the first day or two we were going, and yeah, he like me will just literally just lie down in the dirt and just take a nap, you know, like we were running and then all of a sudden he was like, oh, I gotta take a nap, and he just laid down in the dirt and just slept. And I, you know, to me, I don't, it doesn't even bat an eye, because like I know I'll be doing that in a little bit too, you know. Like, you know, other people, that's they're not going to do that. So yeah, Jeff's pretty amazing.
I've heard him say on podcasts before that that's part of his unique advantage, is the sleeping thing, because he needs very little sleep and he can sleep anywhere at any time and just shut it down like a computer and not have to think about, oh, I need to pack a sleep system, I need to pack sleeping clothes. You know, he doesn't need any of that. It's just lay down, pack out, wake up, run, and do it all over.
See, I can do that no problem. My problem is I haven't figured out, like, when I get into like the multi-day, my body starts like really wanting more sleep. Like the 10-15 minute nap just doesn't do it for me. I start needing like, you know, 2 or 3 hours, and then that, you know, I just get so tired, it gets like crazy. But it might be because I'm 45. I don't know how old Jeff is, but I don't think he's 45. You know, I think he's a little bit younger. when I was younger, I needed no sleep. So I can like relate with it. But like, as I've gotten older, my body's like, my threshold right now is, and I've done it multiple times in the last couple of years, is I can go 41 to 42 hours with no sleep and just constant movement. But after that, like, I'm like, my body will literally just fall asleep as I'm running. So it's about as long as I can push myself with no sleep.
I'm wondering, like, I mean, that just seems like the limit for everybody. I can't see how anybody else can run for longer than 42 hours.
They do. I mean, that Barkley marathons, they go 60 hours with, like, you know, maybe, but they might take a 10-minute nap here or there. I don't know what they're doing. So, yeah.
It's a world that's still developing, which I think is really cool. Like, this whole ultra running thing, like, we're not even close to the final frontier on it. Like, there's just so much still to learn. And I think you're one of those guys who's pushing the limits and letting people know that human capability is more paramount, more important, and bigger than we ever thought.
Well, and I hope, like, for me, because I'm not winning these crazy things and running, like, you know, 14-hour Western States, like, you know, hopefully I'm a little bit more relatable to most people than, like, the 20-year-old kid with no family and, you know, no job running crazy fast. Like, they're awesome and God bless them, but, like, you know, I think most of the people that follow me are, like, you know, mid to, you know, back to the Packers, who are just, like, appreciating the journey of, like, somebody doing hard things because they want to do hard things, but, like, they're not going to win it either. They just want to, like, want the experience, you know, and the experience is where it's all at. So
I think the other part that makes you more relatable is just how funny some of the shit you put out is. Like, I'll be like scrolling and then you'll catch me with like a meme and you'll just hit me in the gut and I'll just bust out laughing. The one about the guy who was chirping you for running too slow. Oh my God. That was one of my favorite conversations I've ever heard.
You know, he ended up apologizing and then, like, said he's changed his whole training plan and is, like, running slow now. And it's, like, he's, like, it's a lot more enjoyable and you were, like, totally right. And, like, I had no idea what I was talking about. And he, like, follows me now. Yeah.
Oh, God.
True story. The guy that told me I was a slow jogger or a fast walker. Yeah. Yeah. It all works out, you know. He saw the light. So.
Yeah. Came over to the dark side.
Like, yeah, no, I do, like, you know, people are like, oh, you shouldn't, you know, don't pay any of those people like any attention. And it's like, I post like people talking shit to me because I find it like personally hilarious. And like, I hope that like some you guys read that stuff and you laugh too, because it's like, it's really funny to me. Like, I don't get, like, upset when people, like, you know, oh, you'd be faster if you ate meat, or, oh, you're, you know, you run so slow. Like, I find that shit hilarious, you know? And so, like, I post it as a joke, and, man, it's the reaction of people is, like, hilarious. People really into it.
I can tell you got at least one person on the timeline laughing, because when I see that stuff, I think it's so funny. Like, just the concept of people telling you how to run, it just, it's like, hilarious thought to me.
Yeah. Now I got some guy right now telling me like I should be running my mountain ultras at barefoot, and I'd be better if I was barefoot. And I'm like, dude, have you ever run in the mountains? Like, it's like sharp rocks the whole time. Like, I can't be running that. He's like, oh, you build up calluses. Like, no, bro, I would not build up calluses like running in the mountains barefoot. Like, that's not gonna happen. So
yeah. So everyone's got their opinions, and the thing is, it costs nothing to put the opinion out there now. It's free. Yeah. So
people love to argue. People love to, you know, fight and do all that sort of fun stuff. So, nah.
Well, I appreciate your lighthearted spirit and just the way you hold yourself. If folks are looking to follow you, what's a good way for them to stay in touch?
So let's see. On Instagram, I'm Amglaze or Amglaze, AMGLAZE, which is, you know, literally just my initials, Andrew Michael Glaze. Everyone's like, why is, you know, it's like, well, because back in the day when I made, you know, Instagram, I wasn't thinking that it was going to turn into this like crazy thing that it is now. On TikTok, I'm Glaze Runs because Am Glaze was taken. And on Strava, I'm Andrew Glaze. So Strava is like, I'm actually verified on Strava, and like that's like what I'm most excited about is like I have like 18,000 followers on Strava, so yeah, I'm on YouTube too, but like, you know, not anything significant. Like I haven't figured out that platform yet, so I don't even know what I'm under on YouTube.
It's all good. All right, yeah. Well, you guys know where to find him now. Andrew, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy run schedule and crazy life to sit down and chat with me.
Of course, man. It was fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And if you're ever in Colorado, let me know, and we'll go hit a slow jog or a fast walk together.
Can't wait. I really need to hit Colorado soon.
All right, man. Well, thanks again, and we'll see you guys next time.